This is Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of McKenzie River Broadcasting. Each week, we learn about issues affecting our community with your host, Tracy Berry.
People who work with those who've been recently paroled from prison say if you want their return to society to be successful, you need to find a way to keep them from becoming homeless and reduce the risk that they'll reoffend. But housing and affordable housing remain tight in Lane County. Participants in a unique partnership known as the Way Home Lane County Reentry Collaborative formally launched this month. This morning on Community Forum, we learn more about the effort. Our guest is Paul Solomon with Sponsors, one of the key agencies involved. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Give us a bit more of an overview.
We're talking about providing 100 units of permanent supportive housing. So this idea that we're providing housing that includes wraparound services, a range of supports designed to keep people in housing, and for the population we serve, folks with criminal histories, to actually keep them out of the criminal justice system. Additionally, we are also looking at a more appropriate utilization of healthcare dollars. So with this project, we have three metrics that will be evaluated on. One is the reduction of recidivism, so fewer people going back to jail or prison with a new conviction. The second is reducing homelessness, as evidenced by having people in permanent housing with leases over a long period of time. And then the third is more appropriate utilization of healthcare dollars. So we've taken a look at what the Medicaid utilization is for people coming out of prison, compared that to the folks that go through Sponsors, and what we've seen is a reduction in emergency stay visits, a reduction in inpatient stays, and higher utilizations of primary care, behavioral health, and prescription coverage, which are all things that we want to see go up while those other higher cost drivers go down.
So healthier people, but a lower cost to the public over the long term is the goal.
Exactly.
Now, Sponsors has a history of working with people who've been released and are working to get reintegrated into the community. For those who don't know much about the agency, just give us some quick background, Paul.
Yeah. So Sponsors has been providing reentry services to people with conviction histories since 1973 here in Lane County. Started out by a group of community activists and Catholic nuns who recognized that there was this population of people coming back to our community that were born and raised here that really didn't have any supports. We've grown incrementally over the last 45 years. Ron Chase was a longtime executive director. He took the one house we had in 1988 and turned it into a transitional housing program, recognizing that housing was one of the more compelling needs that people have. Today, we currently have 20 buildings on 7 sites with over 200 units of transitional and permanent housing for people coming out of prison.
Now, there's transitional housing, one thing, but you're now looking to this new project. Talk about that.
Yeah. So last year, we completed construction of the Oaks at 14th, a 54-unit apartment complex in partnership with Homes for Good, Lane County's public housing agency. And we were able to apply for a grant that was issued by HUD and the Department of Justice. And what they wanted to do was look at this nexus between people who were criminal justice involved and homeless and permanent supportive housing. Does permanent supportive housing reduce recidivism, homelessness, and some of the other things we talked about? So we applied for this planning grant in partnership with Homes for Good, Lane County Parole and Probation, and Third Sector Capital Partners, an organization based in San Francisco that helps structure these projects. And really the focus of this project is this idea of using outcomes-oriented contracts where we work with an end payer, which is usually local or state government. In this case, we are working with the state of Oregon to pay for very specific outcomes. So instead of a traditional contract where you have a scope of work and you get funding for a couple of years, and if you do a good job, great. If you don't do a good job, well, there's no penalties. What we've done is worked with the state of Oregon to structure a contract that says, okay, we've looked at this data and we know that you have a track record of reducing recidivism. So we want to set a baseline, a minimum benchmark of, say, 50% reduction recidivism. But if you go above and beyond that, we're going to give you incentive payments, kind of bonus payments for doing a better job. Similarly, with healthcare outcomes and with housing outcomes. So it's a very different way of doing business. The other part of this is we're embedding a very rigorous evaluation into the project. We're working with researchers from NYU and the University of Oregon to do a 5-year longitudinal study that will evaluate the 125 people who are enrolled in this project, and will follow them for a period of 3 years for each of the cohorts that enroll. So at the end of this project, we'll have really valid data about the effectiveness of this intervention. The other thing that we're able to do is there will be a continuous feedback loop with the data. So we'll be getting regular data polls every 6 months, and that'll help inform how the project moves forward, if there are tweaks that we need to make, or if we see that there are certain things that are going really well, we'll be able to build on those. So it'll be really helpful for us to have this level of evaluation as we're going through this project. Plus, at the end of the 5 years, we'll be able to say with a degree of certainty that this project actually reduces recidivism or homelessness. And that will give us the power to hopefully replicate the project more broadly.
Yeah, is there anything else like this already in Oregon or even neighboring states? How unique is this?
Yeah, it's pretty unique. So when this grant was put out by HUD and DOJ, there were only 7 projects nationally that were awarded. And all of them were in much larger jurisdictions, so like LA County, Prince George's County. So the fact that Lane County received this award really speaks to the power of our collaboration and our individual organizations. The other projects around the country that are similar focus on people who are cycling in and out of the jails, the chronically homeless population. Where our project differs from the rest of them is that we're focusing on folks that are releasing from prison who are moderate to high risk to reoffend, who fit a number of different profiles, women with children, men with sex offense convictions, people with mental illness, veterans, all target populations in this project, because we know that they all have different challenges, and as it relates to housing more broadly, can be very difficult to place. So we wanted to not cherry pick and take the easiest folks to work with, but conversely, we wanted to take the people who had the highest needs and in many ways were at higher risk, because we know that's where we get the best bang for our buck. And if we can turn one person's life around, that kind of has a ripple effect on their family and the community at large.
So the question is, how are you going to decide? You have a limited number of units, even though it's a good-sized project for you.
Right.
How will you set your criteria to decide who'll get in? Is it people who've already gone through the full program here, been in transitional housing for a while?
A couple of things. One, we do have applicant criteria that each person will be screened to see whether or not they are eligible to participate in the program. And if they are eligible, the vast majority of the people will have come through Sponsors Bridge programming at Roosevelt Crossing, where they will have been for 2 or 3 months, or at our women's program. So those will be kind of the primary feeders for the project. But it won't be just placement at the Oaks at 14th. We also have 46 additional units that Homes for Good has dedicated in the form of public housing and Section 8 vouchers. So we've got 100 units at our disposal in total that we'll be able to place people in over this 5-year period. And right now, because these units are already booked up, so the Oaks at 14th is, at this point, I think our occupancy is about 97%. We are waiting for units to vacate. So we're anticipating an estimate about 5 to 7 units a month opening up. And so we'll take from a population of people that will go into a pot to determine if they're eligible, and then they will go to one of 3 places. They'll go to the Oaks at 14th, they'll go into the scattered site housing, or they'll go into services as usual, and that'll be the control group that we'll measure against.
So basically that allows you to ramp it up a little more slowly too, so you can judge it as you're going along with all the data you're collecting?
Exactly, and the staffing piece of this. So one of the things that makes this project unique is that we're taking permanent housing and we're really enhancing the level of services that we're providing. So we'll have additional case management, mental health services, we'll have parole officers who have lower caseloads, we'll have mentors, we'll have educational support, so a wide range of services that are designed to assist people.
Yeah, give people a sense of someone, they get out of prison, mm-hmm. they come into the sponsors program. What sort of things are they needing? What sort of things are you trying to provide just here in the basic program?
So for people coming directly from prison, when you think about it, these are folks who, in many cases, have been locked up for 3, 5, 10 years or more and are really starting out with nothing. We often see people walk in our doors with a plastic bag with literally all of their worldly belongings. They've been released with a bus ticket back to their county of conviction, what few hygienic supplies and legal papers they have, and literally nothing else. So we're starting from scratch. We provide people with bus passes, with identification. We help them find jobs. We purchase work clothing. We help them get certifications if they need them to work. So it's really about getting people to a place of self-sufficiency in a relatively short period of time. Most people in our bridge housing are with us for 60 to 120 days. So when you consider someone's walking in the door homeless and indigent, and 3 or 4 months later they're walking out with a job, stable housing, in compliance with the release conditions, drug and alcohol free, we drug test everybody in the program twice weekly, and having completed our programming, which includes drug and alcohol treatment, cognitive behavioral therapy, range of different programs. It's a lot to do in a short period of time.
So they move into the permanent housing mm-hmm. unit.
Yeah.
How self-sufficient are they at that point then?
At that point, they're in a much better place to manage their own affairs. In most cases, they'll have some source of stable income. In most cases, they'll be working in school or receiving some type of public benefit like Social Security disability or VA disability. But at the same time, what we really want to test here is, can we take these people who are more self-sufficient but still at kind of a challenging place in their life. They've only been out for a few months. Can we provide additional supports over a period of 12 to 18 months or more that really increase the likelihood that they will never wind up back in the system again? So that ultimately is what we're trying to test here, is can we provide permanent supportive housing in a way that reduces homelessness, recidivism, and sees people healthier in the long term.
So how do you set what a rent would be for someone? Is it a sliding scale based on their level of employment and how they're progressing? Or how do you figure all that out?
So the rents are predetermined because this is a low-income housing tax credit project or public housing. They have to meet a certain percentage of the area median income. And so for the folks that we're serving in these projects, they need to be earning less than about a little over $12 an hour to qualify. So we're really targeting people who are kind of on the bottom rung of the economic scale. Once they qualify, they're also eligible for additional subsidies. So, for example, if we have a person that's on SSI that's bringing in $700 a month, we can use Section 8 vouchers that will pay the majority of their rent. They're still required to pay 30% of their income, but that makes it much more affordable for someone who is living on, you know, $700 or $800 a month. So we're really trying to look at kind of where people are and making sure that we have the necessary supports in place to meet their basic needs. This project also has additional subsidies built in so that if a person loses their job or comes into the project and does not have enough income, that we will subsidize the rent until they do. So this will be what's called a housing first project. So a person can't be denied housing for lack of income. In addition, there are also other aspects of Housing First that will apply. If a person is struggling with substance abuse, well, we work to address those issues instead of just evicting them from the project. So it'll look a little different than some of our other housing projects.
Now, you mentioned that, and you've talked about this in the past, too. I mean, the people who are coming here, they're people who grew up here or lived here or worked here before they went into prison. So they have the family connections and things like that. How do you bring in that those community ties as well as part of the treatment?
Yeah. In many cases, people have family supports, and we work with them from the day they get out to reconnect with family and make sure that they are developing healthy relationships in the community. And one of the ways that we do that is through our mentoring program, where we have mentors that are trained and volunteer to match up with people coming out of prison with like interests to help them develop more healthy relationships in the community. What we also see is a lot of folks who have lost kind of their ties to the community, who don't have family or supports when they get out. So programs like mentoring can be really instrumental in helping people develop healthy community relationships. The other thing that we do is we provide parenting classes for men and women who have children that are reuniting with their kids to help develop healthy parenting skills so that when they reunite with their kids, they're in a much better place to take on the role of an active parent.
I suppose this would be a good time to talk about how Sponsors is always looking for volunteers as well as donations and support.
We are constantly in need of volunteers to assist primarily in our mentoring program, where we have a really robust mentoring program that matches up with people 3 months prior to them getting out of custody and then works with them to engage in social recreational activities in the community and just be a friend. So that's one way that people can get involved. And they can do that by calling our main number at 541-485-8341 or reaching out to Christy Mamick through our website at www.sponsorsinc.org. The other way that we can use support is we're constantly in need of donations, whether it's gently used clothing, household goods, bikes. Those are things that we are in constant need of for people who are getting out to make sure that they just have the basic items to be able to get started. It's almost like furnishing apartments for college kids. I mean, we have a warehouse full of stuff that we are constantly cycling donations in and out of so that we can use those materials to help get our clients a fresh start.
I'm trying to think, when you're starting a project like this, I mean, you're using some existing inventory, you're doing some transitional things, you have a lot of things laid out in the grant, but to you, what either logistically or philosophically is the biggest challenge or hurdle to just get this up and running the way you'd like to see it?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it's taken a year and a half of us crunching data, figuring out kind of the economics of the project, the contract structuring, developing the design for the intervention. We had to go through a couple of institutional review boards here in Oregon and at NYU, which were both heavy lifts. But I think probably the biggest challenge is actually launching the project, because, you know, we've spent all of this time thinking about it. Now we're at this place where we're ready to start enrolling people. And even though we've developed really robust policies and procedures, when it comes to actually serving the first person, we know that not everything is going to go according to plan. So really excited about the prospect of being able to provide an intervention that is going to make a huge difference in the lives of the people we serve.
So for you, what is success going to look like?
Yeah. So success looks different for each person, but ultimately, success will be people staying out of trouble. No longer being involved in the criminal justice system, so successfully completing the term of their supervision without getting in trouble, without being reincarcerated, staying in stable housing. Clearly, that's another very important aspect of this project, is that we want to see people stably housed and really on an upward trajectory, kind of a vertical integration model where we're taking people who are homeless and indigent, moving them from transitional housing to permanent housing, and hopefully as they move out of our permanent housing units, they'll be going to something as nice or better, maybe home ownership or moving in with a partner. So we're really looking at kind of what do those long-term outcomes look like, not just 6 months to 12 months from now, but 3 to 5 years from now.
And I'm just curious, I mean, with this number of units, it's probably never enough for the need that's out there, but mm-hmm. Do you see yourself trying to then expand that, or do you think this will be a workable total? Give me a sense of that.
Yeah, great question. So, no, there's never enough units. I mean,
give us a sense of numbers,
Yeah, right. So at this moment in time, our beds at Roosevelt Crossing, our bridge housing, transitional housing project, are booked up 6 to 12 months in advance. So if people don't begin the application process 6 to 12 months prior to release, the likelihood of them getting in is pretty slim. So the need is great. We are continuing to develop more housing because we recognize that that's one of the greatest needs we have in our community. And part of it stems from the fact that, one, there is a lack of affordable housing in this community. But secondly, and in many ways more importantly, people with criminal histories have additional barriers. I've got a criminal history from over 20 years ago. I own 2 homes. I've never missed a rent payment. I've never missed a mortgage payment. Yet if I were to rent an apartment anywhere in Eugene, I would have to go through a criminal background check. How relevant is something I did 20 plus years ago to my ability to be a good tenant today? Well, because of electronic records, that information never goes away. So for our population, it really is a double whammy. Between the lack of housing and their criminal histories, it can make it incredibly challenging to find affordable housing. So what we are doing is continuing to look for opportunities to develop more housing. In the spring, we're going to break ground on a 10-unit tiny house project located on a piece of property we own on Elmira and Iowa Street, which is right around the corner from our property on Highway 99. So those are the type of things that we're looking at. What types of housing can we develop? Tiny houses, large apartment projects, scattered site housing, just a range of different options for people so that we have more housing stock available for the population we serve.
Yeah, final thoughts, anything you want to add?
This project is really a unique opportunity for Lane County to highlight the amazing work that we're doing. We're getting a lot of national attention from HUD, the Department of Justice, regular site visits, the Urban Institute that is overseeing all of the research that's going on in these projects. So we see this as really a unique opportunity to highlight the partnerships that we've developed with Lane County Parole and Probation, Homes for Good, and sponsors, but also the unique work that we're doing. This is a model that hopefully will be replicated broadly throughout the country when we're done.
Paul Solomon from Sponsors, thanks for being our guest this morning on Community Forum.
Community Forum is a public affairs presentation of Mackenzie River Broadcasting. If you have questions, comments, or your organization is interested in taking part in a future program, we'd like to hear from you. Send your letter to Mackenzie River Broadcasting, Attention Public Affairs, 925 Country Club Road, Suite 200, Eugene, Oregon, 97401. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again next week.